This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction, righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war. Over this past year, we've been blessed to have many significant influencer voices join this channel for interviews, from General Flynn to Archbishop Vigano to Jim Pugh. And now we have the pleasure of having Juan O'Savin join us for an amazing discussion on the origins and the challenges that we face as we disassemble and confront one of the greatest evils known to man, which we call the Cabal. So please join me for part two of Juan O'Savin Unplugged. At the center of this fight is the military in one way or another. And you mentioned the five-sided part of the Pentagon. And in one way or another now, they are kind of at the center of all of this by, if you want to say, their allegiance or vote to who's going to be president. What would be your thoughts on that whole direction and where we are right now?
Well, let me see if I understood the question correctly. What you're asking me is, you know, is the military the key to saving the country? If the policing has become unable to control the federal government at the local and state level, if the Congress and the states have been unable to control themselves or to control the federal government, if it's out of control, if the alligator's loose and now it's broken down the screen door and it's threatening to break into the kitchen, who's going to protect us from this monster? If it's out of control, it's a 12-foot alligator now, and you're not, you know, mom is not going to be able to beat it out of the kitchen with the broom. Who's going to protect us? Is it the police officer with a sidearm? Is it somebody internal, if they even have the authority, or is it something else? And if I understand the question correctly, what I've said to other audiences is that at this point in time, we've seen in this national drama from the election forward that vote fraud has been sanctioned. It's okay. That even with the knowledge and understanding that there's been manipulation of lying facts, digital Pearl Harbor, America was struck, attacked by a digital Pearl Harbor to take control of the country in this vote fraud. That fraud came from foreign powers, a bunch of NATO countries working together, people collusively working from our own intelligence agencies inside CIA, along with British MI6 and MI5, and Mossad and other intelligence agencies working together to capture America by picking its leaders through a fraudulent vote, to put their Manchurian candidates into power over America, to spend our money their way for their advantage, to control America, the alligator running the kitchen. So with that in mind, how are we going to stop that? How can we stop it? Are you going to do it with citizens with pitchforks? Are you going to do it even with law enforcement from within the states? Is it possible for them to stop this federal monster, this federal alligator, from tearing the whole house apart from the inside out? And it's been my contention that at this point in time, that's not possible. That Congress, when it had a chance to correct and to administrate, to take control of a fraudulent vote and outcomes, failed both before and after the fact to protect America from this external threat. enemies foreign who conspired together to manipulate the vote in America through the Dominion vote machines, which, by the way, Dominion countries, that's a British term. Even the name of the machine denotes its authorship and origins. This Dominion system, words mean things. They like that name because they can dominate us through the vote. The Dominion vote system to steal our vote from us, steal our country from us, one congressman at a time, one senator at a time, one judicial appointment at a time, till you can't get it back because it's a huge ship. You can't turn this thing around. It's you're headed for the rocks and nothing can stop you. You haven't got control of the helm of the ship. And finally, they get a different captain in there and they're going to, you know, take us on the rocks for sure. The reality is that no individual state is capable of doing this. Look what Texas tried to do in protesting. You know, the Dominion machine, when Texas looked at the Dominion vote counting machine, they had an internal finding, and I think it was like 170 pages or something, where they wrote this scathing report looking at the Dominion vote machine and said that, you know, the thing was designed for a fraudulent vote, that every aspect of the machine was designed to allow a corrupt vote to get through. That there was no aspect of it that was trustworthy. And so they said, not on your life, Texas isn't allowing Dominion machines to be used in Texas elections. Well, who wanted that Dominion machine in there? What elected official wanted, and groups of officials wanted, that Dominion machine in Texas? And why would any real citizen looking for a fair and honest vote want a machine that was so fragile, as they said in the report there in Texas, so easily perverted in the vote? You know, you had, you know, 10 and 12 year old kids going in there and changing the vote in the machine, you know, remotely. So the machine wasn't robust at all. And then who's saying, no, it's robust, it's okay? What other states, how in these other states was Texas able to come up with a 170-page report outlining how fragile and susceptible to vote fraud the Dominion system was, but none of these other states saw the same thing? Are you serious? Seriously. And who was behind getting the machines in those places that didn't want to see that? People that wanted to be able to manipulate and control the vote because they wanted an outcome other than what the people in their area would want, would vote for, would agree to. Why? Because they wanted to steal the community, steal the tax dollars, steal the legislation, so they could control the locals against their own best wishes and interests by stealing the vote and putting players in that would do their bidding, their will, against the desires of the local people. And that happened out across the whole nation. And you didn't even have to get the Dominion system in Texas only. It just had to be a couple of vulnerable places, and the whole country, and now the whole world, is left with the consequences of a frauded vote in certain small jurisdictions, a handful of states, where they were able to get it through and tweak the vote far enough to throw the whole election off. And then, because the local officials at the state level couldn't turn back the vote, there couldn't be a lawful action to flip it over because the courts wouldn't let you do something in a federal election from the local level. And because the judges blocked action, you know, the real merits of the validity of the vote haven't been heard, only standing. All these cases that were denied to go forward through the courts, it was standing that was the common theme. They'd say, well, you don't really have the legal right to make a claim here. You're not the aggrieved party. So the court's not going to hear your case because you're not directly affected here or there. And so they just kept shutting cases down. It's like the birth certificate with Obama. The merits of whether or not the birth certificate was real or not were never actually decided by a court. Only the standing of the people bringing the cases was ever decided. So we haven't actually had, you know, people have this common perception that the birth certificate issue was settled and done and taken care of. No, it wasn't. It was never decided. It was just that the parties that kept coming in and fussing and stewing, the court said, well, you don't have standing. You don't have a right to say anything here. It's not your business. Go away. And the merits of whether that fraudulent document was real or fake or what it meant was never actually decided by a court. Even though people raised the issue, the courts didn't settle the matter based on those issues. They settled it on, well, you don't have, you know, a place to make an argument. So the American citizens and Texas itself, when it says, hey, these other states, they're trying to manipulate the federal vote and get an outcome that's against the interests of Texas, and all these other states join in Texas and we're going to fight this together. And the courts said, well, we don't think you have a case against this other state. And, you know, you can't join the Texas lawsuit. And so, you know, it's divide and conquer. And then, yeah, there's no case here because you don't have standing to raise such a claim. The vote itself, the legitimacy of the vote, wasn't argued in time to stop this swearing in. Now, to get precisely to the question you just asked me, what's the role of the military in this situation today? If America has been captured by enemies domestic, the Al Capones, if Chicago is now not just running Chicago, but running the whole country, well, it's an internal problem. Police are used internally. Military is to foreign enemies. We don't use, with the posse comitatus laws, we don't use the military against American citizens, except in certain very limited situations. If a foreign enemy has breached the wall, has got to a certain point, and then the nation, the republic, the Constitution is under threat, and the policing is not capable of repulsing that threat of protecting the citizenry, the military can be used under, you know, guard rules and governors, etc., against a threat, be it a natural disaster or an invading army, such as what's about to happen down on the Mexican-Texas border. Mexican-Arizona border, Mexican-California border, with all these immigrants coming up from Guatemala right now. With an external threat, now the military can have to take action. But let's think about, it's not just what's happened in the vote machines inside of America. Where was the threat originally? President Trump, when he was still candidate Trump, before he won in 2016 and then took office in 2017, he was attacked. He was attacked by British intelligence and by a banking cartel working out of the city of London with a false dossier saying that the Russians had compromised Trump in his business dealings, and then were promoting him to become president of the United States and secretly attacking people that were enemies of Trump in his campaign so that he could become the victor in the election here in America. And then that the Russians, by controlling Trump with this secret sex tapes, the secret knowledge of what he did with prostitutes in Russia, pissing on the bed that Obama had slept in, and all of this nefarious stuff, that the Russians had some leverage over President Trump and could use it to get Trump to do things in a way that favored Russia. And so this Russian dossier was put together by these foreign entities with foreign interests outside the United States in the city of London, the banking city, against candidate Trump. And by the way, that piece of shit, that lying piece of shit, Halper, Halper is the guy, he worked in the Reagan administration. He was essentially a spy inside the Reagan administration for George H.W. Bush, former head of CIA before he became vice president. And what you haven't heard, except probably from me, is that he was the banking side of Iran-Contra. He's the unindicted co-conspirator on Iran-Contra. The money and gun running operation, which President Reagan said happened under his watch, but was not fully understood or known by him, but he had to take responsibility for it when he did his national press conference out of the Oval Office. Who was actually running that? That was George H.W. Bush, former head of CIA. And the banker on Iran-Contra was Halper. Well, because Halper was an unnamed co-conspirator, unindicted co-conspirator during Iran-Contra, he skates free. Where does he go? He goes over to London. And then he gets dual British citizenship, not just U.S., but dual British citizenship. And he's a professor at Cambridge. And from Cambridge, he's also providing advisory role, serving an advisory role to Department of Defense here in the U.S. and looking at foreign policy and all sorts of stuff, getting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars from the U.S. government for his advisory role. And what did Halper do? He's the one that came up with the plot to try to use a honeypot, a young female, to entice George Papadopoulos to betray his wife and become, you know, complicit in some spying activity and taint President elect or at that time candidate Trump on Russian collusion, and to paint a picture of him that wasn't true. Halper came up with that plot. Halper is the one that was behind the scenes manipulating the ideas of creating the idea of a Russian collusion project with Trump to get Trump elected, that he was sold out to Russian masters. He came up with that whole lying scam on foreign soil. This is a person with both American and British citizenship, because he moved over there to Cambridge after he escaped any kind of exposure during Iran-Contra. And so he's still a threat. When Ollie North and Fawn Hall were destroying records and spiriting them out of the White House in her boots and bra, the records related to the banking, the money, which wasn't ever really raised in Iran-Contra. If you go to the war or the Tower Commission report, you know, doesn't go into those details very far. Why? Because you found Halper there. So Halper survived all of that. And he's still out there loose. He's a missile looking for the next target and getting paid by people inside our government to keep him viable and credible with his job, and getting paid by British MI6 to keep him viable. And then at the critical moment when they need him to help take down a person that might be a threat to their machine, their system, he's paid off, and he comes in, tries to become part of the Trump campaign, tries to become an advisor in the incoming Trump administration, tries to take out various officials, just like Flynn. Taking down Flynn because he's a threat to them, because he knows where all the bodies are buried. So what happens is, These are foreign individuals coming together in an intelligence operation, MI6, their equivalent to our CIA, MI5, their equivalent to our FBI, Italian intelligence operatives and facilities, where the vote was being cooked and managed by Brit operatives also that were down there in Italy, and NATO allies using Italian and NATO facilities to move the data through satellite systems and into the American system through Canada. All of this work that was being done, that's an external threat. That is a war by another means. It's not a ship on the sea with guns blasting Volkswagens into America and blowing up buildings 3,000 miles an hour through the air. It's not aircraft. It's not tanks. It's a digital war to capture the flag of your country, to capture control of your country by deciding which leaders get to be in charge. Not the leaders that the American people would vote, but the leaders that these foreign manipulators would vote in to capture a country in a militarized digital war by another means operation. And that's what happened here. The military, the U.S. military, is it supposed to defend America? If the policing action, if Congress, if the courts can't be made to protect America, if they've failed to protect America, if they're so captured that they won't act to protect because of being compromised by one means or another, honeypotted, blackmailed, bribed, murdered, under threat of murder, exposure. If they're so compromised, captured, that they can't act or won't act to protect the Constitution, the contract of the American people with its government, to protect the American people's role as the owners and supervisors of the government, if they can't protect from Congress and the courts that contract with America, and are going to let the alligator loose in the kitchen and the rest of the house to destroy the rest of the house, who's left to protect America? And it's my contention that at the moment, on January 19th, the Director of National Intelligence, who runs 17 agencies, 16 intelligence investigative agencies in the U.S., and then the 17th agency is the Office of National Intelligence, the Director of the National Intelligence's office, and he manages the other 16. So 17 total, another key number. Why? Because he's got to brand everything they do, five-sided building, 17, their worship of Osiris, 17 agencies to run all the investigative functions here in the country, intelligence functions. When the Director of National Intelligence, under executive order from President Trump, from the action from September 12th, I believe it was, 2018, had to report on any foreign interference in the national election within 45 days of the end of the election, back in December of 2020, that report was supposed to be presented to the president and to the other agency heads. It wasn't, because there was an argument over the content and what the meaning was. And finally, on January 19th, that report was delivered a month late, the day before President Trump was to leave office. And that report showed foreign interference in the U.S. election sufficient to change the outcome of the election. But with one day left, having failed all of the intervening time since the November 3rd election, with one day left, Congress still failed to act to protect the American people, to do something to protect the vote in America. And then the courts, the Supreme Court, also failed to act to protect the American people against this digital attack on our ability to elect a leader of our choosing. And so 24 hours later, at noon on January 20th, when Joe Biden was sworn in as President of the United States, Commander-in-Chief, the leader of the free world, leader of America. Up until that moment in time, the military didn't actually have a specific function. They could monitor, they can use military intelligence to monitor all the information, to sift and probe and look at every possible angle of the threat. But our country isn't run by a military junta. It's not run by generals. The generals answer to civilian authorities. That's the way it's laid out. The commander-in-chief is elected by the people to administer the country from the executive office position. The military is subservient to him. However, at the point that Congress and the courts allowed a person to be sworn in and put in a position to take control of the fort, the American defense system against enemies foreign, if they have knowledge, which, by the way, the Director of National Intelligence report provides the information, the knowledge, the data showing that there was foreign interference sufficient to overturn the outcome of the election. If they have data showing that at the military level, and they know that somebody who's not the American people's elected representative is then going to be put into power, they have the obligation to protect us against enemies foreign and domestic, both of which are in play here. And did not, it would be my contention, functionally, tangibly hand over control of the military, lock, stock, and barrel, to Joe Biden. They instead began an internal investigation to complete and verify and vet and validate the information that was provided in the Director of National Intelligence report and come independently to their own conclusion. Those military leaders were protecting America and doing their job as they were in position to do. And because there was no missiles flying at America at that exact instant, the need to come to a rapid, instantaneous conclusion at the exact seconds or moment that Joseph Biden was sworn in this agreed upon act by the Supreme Court and the Congress, which the military did not buy into, the leaders in the military did not buy into, then they began this their own internal assessment, comparing their intelligence data through their military intelligence methods and means with the Director of National Intelligence conclusions. And as a result of that, over a period of days and weeks, independently came to the conclusion that the interference was sufficient to change the outcome of the election. Now, the way that the Military Code of Justice is written, if a Manchurian candidate or some foreign power has gained control of the helm of the ship, control of the ship of state, gotten in positions of authority and power over the American people in this office, the military is charged first with protecting the Constitution and the Republic. Well, the Constitution, why? Because that's the contract that gives any validity to there being a federal government over the people. That contract, that Constitution, has been violated and broken. The military is charged with protecting it and restoring it. So, what happens next is the military doesn't immediately go out and take action, it first protects the people, the nation, the Constitution, the Republic, the states. And then, as quickly as possible, and this is where a lot of people get mixed up, they think that the military should be out there doing arrests right now and taking control and doing so. Now, the military's protection, if there was threats that were, you know, some individual threat that could cumulatively threaten the Republic or whatever, they could do arrest. But their primary thing is to restore lawful civilian authorities to control over the country. In the case of the executive office, to restore a lawful civilian president to office. Now, if the result of the election in this case could not be known, if it was so screwed up, if the data was so scrambled in all the computer banks somehow that you couldn't tell what the vote was or who did it, then perhaps they'd have to do some kind of a militarily administered revote for the country. But that's not what's going on here. The vote is actually quite noble. The majority of the states clearly voted decisively for President Trump. The handful of states that were in question that flipped the vote over, that digital data, that 3 o'clock in the morning stopped the count and then put in the new set of numbers and algorithms in place to flip it over. In that forensic analysis of the digital data from this digital attack that's been done, shows clearly that President Trump not just won, but won decisively, a mammoth win, including in those states. So the military has to place the lawful person who won the election in office, not do a revote, just recognize the true outcome of the vote and place that person back in authority. But does the military do that for the whole country or just for its section? As a first step, lawful civilian authority would be recognized by the military as the winner of that election, which in this case was Donald Trump. And that win, with them recognizing that, they hand the reins of power. As Mao said, all power emanates from the barrel of a gun. Who has the biggest gun here? Is it police departments? Is it states, even with their National Guard? Or is it the American military? Who has the biggest gun? When the military doesn't let President Biden run around on Air Force One, when the military doesn't let President Biden tell them what to do precisely, even if they allow illusions of power and military action to take place, if they're not doing that, it's for a reason. You know, over the White House last couple of days, people have been commenting on the black flag over the White House, just below the American flag, and at a number of other facilities. Well, the black flag, it's a black military POW, missing in action, prisoner of war flag from the Vietnam War era. But these things can have multiple meanings, dual meanings. Why are they flying that flag over the White House right now? Why are they flying it at other facilities right now? It might have some extra meaning. Who's the actual POW at the White House right now? And who's missing in action? There's some games and trolling taking place. And the military, in its role of restoring as quickly as safely possible lawful civilian control, first within the military house, who is the commander in chief really supposed to be, because an enemy attacked us digitally in a digital war against America. Who do they put in office there? And then what does the military do once a true, proper, lawful commander-in-chief is in office in play, then the military answers to the lawful commander. What next? And the lawful commander says, we need to do this and this and this. The military, this isn't a military junta of generals running America. That's a South American banana republic thing, where the only way to get lawful control of the country is for generals to do it, because the crime lords have taken over the presidencies and the payoffs. And, you know, it's the Chicago mob running the country, the New York mob running the country, the New Jersey mob running the country. Here in America, we put the lawful commander-in-chief into office. That's what the military's role would be initially, based on the military code of justice. Restore lawful civilian authority to their command and control position, the lawful operation of the country, the government. Then to look to that lawful commander-in-chief for direction, how to proceed. The military doesn't do the arrests at the direction of generals, except for some instant protection. They look to the president, and then they do what the president's bidding is. Look, suppose you put Trump or any person in president's office, but the courts are corrupt. Congress is corrupt. They're captured. They've already demonstrated that they're a captured operation. You couldn't get to justice in the Justice Department. You couldn't get to a right review of the vote and the voting machines and practices. They wouldn't hear the case. They wouldn't let the states, you know, have a case heard about the states saying, hey, the whole country, all of us states are being run roughshod over by a couple of crooked Chicago mob states that are trying to control the outcome for the whole country and the whole world. You got to stop this. And the court says, well, no, we don't have to, and we're not going to do that. You can't get to justice in the Justice Department. What's left? The president can't turn to the courts, because the courts have already shown that they're not reliable. They're not working in the American people's lawful interests. They won't do their job. The president can't turn to Congress, because Congress is dysfunctional. It's too captured. Too many of the players are compromised. So you can't get there. Why? How did they get compromised? Well, what do you think was going on at Epstein Island? What do you think's been going on at the Standard Hotel and all these other places? What was WikiLeaks all about? These sex clubs, this perversion, this pedophilia, the Podesta brothers. Why are they so pissed off about Assange and WikiLeaks? What's going on there? Because they're sex clubs, and worse. We're being exposed, these hidden manipulations to control our leaders in office all around the world, all around our country. And so you can't get to justice in the Justice Department, and you can't get Congress to work in the interest of the American people, because they're interested in their own interests and their buddies' interests, their foreign nationals' interests, their banking, City of London interests. And so what happens next? The only solution, it's a military solution. The new commander-in-chief has to turn back to the military after being put in office and direct the military to go make the arrests. Arrest those people that are compromised, that are working with foreign powers and interests, that didn't safeguard the Constitution, the contract between the American people and its government. And the president directs the military, take that fucking bunch of shitballs to Gitmo, lock them up, and we'll do our trials there, because you can't get to justice in the Justice Department. And that's what's going to happen next.
I think the public is now ready, or at least the majority of it is ready. I think this time has been an important time to have people reflect very deeply. And as you have said in your own casts and your interviews, we have gone through a near-death experience of this nation, which I think at the end will be an important point in our history to hopefully never forget how easy this country can be slipped away if we don't stay vigilant in all that we do. Juan, you have recently released or been part of the release of a film. Obviously, it goes on top of your book, Kid at the Side of the Road. But this film that you debuted down in Nevada, I believe it's Sound of Freedom. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
It's taking this exactly as you just kind of hit on at the very end of that, was the pedophilia issue and the child sex trafficking issue in particular. And we're seeing a resurgence of that again with this borders opening up and the news coming out of the disaster we're seeing with the kids now once again being amassed and then being put in with guardians, so to speak, across the nation. Talk a little bit about that in this film and, you know, what this means to you and what this hopefully will mean to the nation as we move forward here to try to build an awareness, which I personally think is at the center point of really taking back this country. Because my personal opinion is if we can't stand up for our children and stop the sacrifice of our children, the unborn and the young, we violated one of the most basic tenets that God has in our existence, which is to be protectors of those that have no voice.
Well, if you can't protect the innocent, if you can't protect those that are weak in your society, and then you turn to God like he's supposed to protect you, please, God, bless us. Bless America. You know, I'm looking right now at that fucking monument, that motherfucking monument right there at the center of our unholy city, at the center of power in our country. I'm looking at that thing, and you realize that this whole city is built around a sex cult. That sex cult didn't just show up here in America a few days ago, a few years ago, a century ago. It goes all the way back into biblical times, even into Canaan land and Babylon before that. And what was the significance? When we think of the holy lands and Israel and in biblical times, oh, it was so wonderful. And King David was there, and there's, you know, all the holy everything, you know, cities and the temple and everything else. That was the best of times and the worst of times. That was this holy place where the seat of God, the throne of God, was first in the tent of meeting, and then the temples that were built by Temple of Solomon and before. When these holy places were built, right there in the same land, what do we see in the scriptures also? We see conversation about on the mountaintops, on the hills, around the holy city, around this holy land. The people were taking their children up to these hilltop sacrificial sites, and they were making their children to pass through the fire. That's a preacher in the pulpit, a 501c3 church way of saying. They roasted their children alive, babies alive, in these sacrificial offerings to Baal and Moloch. It's right there in the Bible. What was going on in the land before the people of Israel came out of the desert, out of the Sinai desert, went into Jericho and then the other cities in Canaan land, the land of the children of Cain? What was going on? They were sacrificing children to Baal and Moloch, to Satan, because the devil required them to sacrifice their children in order to have a good harvest, to have health and other things. So they were literally roasting their children alive for gain, sacrificing them to Satan. And then you look at what's going on in America and the rest of the world. We look the other way. We even protect people that do things that we would personally find hideous, unacceptable here in America, the way countries like Saudi Arabia treat their women, like slaves internally. We as a country promote that. I've talked recently several times about the situation in Libya. King Idris was running Libya up until 67, and they had slave bazaars right there in Tripoli, you know, in the Marine Corps him, to the shores of Tripoli. What was going on? Slave trading. It's been going on for centuries. And when Hillary sat there and cackled about Gaddafi, we came, we saw, he died. Well, after her cackling was done, the slave bazaar that Gaddafi closed in downtown Tripoli in 1967, in 2012, was reopened. And slaves have been being traded, children, young children, women and boys, girls and boys, have been being bought and sold in a slave bazaar in Tripoli. And who allowed that to happen under their watch? It wasn't just Obama. It was the American people. It was your Air Force that was used to close the skies over Libya so that Gaddafi couldn't protect himself. I mean, not like Gaddafi if you want, but he's the one that was giving us information on the phone, his intelligence people with our intelligence people, way before 9/11, giving us information about what was going on over there and after, and the groups that were conspiring and plotting to do things in the Mideast. I've talked about that extensively before. When Gaddafi was out, these people get the slave bazaar back in. Who were we pushing and promoting that allowed that to happen? I've already talked extensively in other places about that. I won't get into that now. But with that in mind, we as a people have a responsibility to protect children and innocent, and we as a people haven't done that. The kids coming in from Mexico, freight containers on ships coming in from all over the world with children in them, and then trafficked here in America. And numerous guys have talked about that. We've had seizures, we've had kids discovered. That's not a myth, that's a reality. And it's being looked the other way on by people inside of our government. There's collusion here on what's going on there. We have to stop this. And if we can't stop the trading and the pedophiling of children with the protection, with the sins by omission of not seeing some of this trafficking occurring in America and in places under our protection, if we can't stop it, why would you expect God to protect you? You won't act to protect the innocent. You're not acting in a godly manner. And then you went, oh, God bless America. Give me a good harvest or whatever. We're as evil as the land that we went in to invade. The people of Israel went into Canaan land and set up their religion and put all their houses up. And then within a generation, they're doing exactly what the people were doing when they came in there. They're sacrificing children to the devil. And in America, what's being allowed? Hey, Ghislaine Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein, those were protected operations. And what were they doing? Is it just the pedophilia of children at those locations and the Justice Department looking the other way and giving Jeffrey Epstein a slap on the hand? Why? Because he's working for the intelligence agencies. Those people that were being compromised when they came to the island and filmed and photographed into the university system. Yeah, professors, teachers, people running these university systems were pedophiles. And they were getting caught on tape. And then they were being manipulated. Who gets the promotion? Who gets the degree? Who gets to get the high office in some location, the corporation, etc.? Who's managing those people? That's CIA, MI6, Mossad, other intelligence agencies, all with a secret handshake, working on behalf of who? Bankers, foreign nationals, foreign governments, bloodlines, all of them involved in compromising and blackmailing and honeypotting these people. The document that Lynn Wood presented with the deposition the other day, and what's the guy say in the deposition? That the way that they gained power through various government agencies, through corporate entities, etc., in that document, they handed off children, adopted, born to themselves or others that they could control by whatever means. They traded children like trading cards to get higher office, to get positions of authority and control over you, over the American people, out into the world. That was a pedophile sex club. And we see this stuff going on with the Salinas family in Mexico and the people running them that are the money and controlling how America operates, how Mexico operates, how other South American countries operate through the trafficking of children all over the world. Where we have to start to get these people under control and out of office, the alligator really is this pedophile sex club operations going on all over the world. I could talk about it, I will talk about it in the future, even the stuff that Nixon ran into and found and the way he tried to come against it with the Houston Project and others. These sex clubs, which have degenerated down into pedophilia clubs and worse, are what is running and has been running America for a very long time. And the film, Sound of Freedom, is an opening salvo, a beginning point to help wake the public up to what's been going on right under their noses in plain sight out across America and the world. And it's a battle cry for us to regain control of our country and then go out into the world and be not our brother's keeper, but to be our brother's brother. And anybody that doesn't think that that's how things are running or that I'm overstating it, what's in the middle in a fucking city that's at the center of your country that you're bowing down to with all of your tax money, all of your laborers turned into cash that's handed off to the federal government to run you? And what's at the center of that city? That fucking monument. That's what's there. It is a religious symbol in this religious city to control you and honor their sex gods. And the control over you and your children. God's children are not for sale. We will not be your slaves anymore. That's the way it is. America's coming back. We're going to take control of our country and our government. And unfortunately, the only option at this point in time isn't citizens with pitchforks. It will be the military option after lawful civilian authority is put into power as the American people voted for. And then that lawful civilian authority will administer the direction that the country goes through the military regaining control of these locations and facilities so that we can get our country back for American citizens' benefit, not for a bunch of globalist pedophile thugs and Satan-worshipping thieves the way that they want it to be.
Man, that just sums it right up. The fact is that I think people have a hard time really facing how dark and evil this is. And I think it comes from a lot of years of being shaped and a lot of years of being conditioned to believe that what you think you're seeing is wrong, to being told that to look the other way, to being containerized and channeled in this world in such a way that the evils seem out of touch. And it is truly dark and evil. I think that in the process of this, it will be a wake-up call and a shaking of the soul of the nation. So as we kind of wrap this up, Juan, what's your thoughts on that process of the waking up of America? Your film that you put out, The Perfect Day, is just, it's a brilliantly done piece. And as a filmmaker myself, I will say that it's an absolutely impressive piece of bringing together a story with many, many layers that one has to pay attention to the details, which I think is a big lesson in itself. As we go forward here, and I advocate the same thing you say, that this is not a war of pitchforks. This is a war of faith and strength, of standing up, being bold, even defiant. But as we go forward here, what would you say to people to, in the sense of keeping their faith, keeping their focus forward, and what their commitment is to this nation?
Well, with the things that are going to happen here shortly, the mainstream media, as it currently exists, is trying to program people's minds to think that what will happen, what must happen, is somehow the makings of a civil war, that it's somehow illegal or unjust. It's the exact opposite. It's not illegal or unjust. It is the lawful exercise of the people's will by the military, protecting the people's will in the Constitution. And to the extent that they would twist that, they become irrelevant themselves. They've picked a side, and it's against the American people and the will of the American people. The new media that you represent, properly explaining this, properly putting it in perspective for people, you're valid because you represent reality, and you represent the will of the American people, and you represent the right of the American people to have that conversation and make it happen. The fact that we're going to come after these monsters and displace them out of office and take control of the country may not be pleasant and easy, but it's what has to be done. And in working that through, it's not a civil war. It's a revolutionary war. The attack came from foreign shores. America had a revolution against the bloodlines, the king, the Brits. And that's why the Constitution was written, this alliance, this coming together of the states against what had become a foreign enemy. Washington, D.C., in the way that it's administering against the American people, doing the bidding of foreign masters, promoting this false Russian collusion thing, and protecting a fake vote, a false vote, a digital Pearl Harbor against America, has become the enemy of the American people in the way it administers. And so we're in the middle of a revolutionary war against foreign entities taking over power and control in our country. That's America coming together against a foreign enemy. If you hear people saying that we're having a civil war, that we're destroying things internally, that, you know, we're supposedly going with pitchforks to do whatever, no, we're not. This isn't a civil war. And we're not going to burn down our own house to save it. We're going to catch those monsters by the tail, and we're going to throw them in Gitmo. We're going to retake lawful authority of government operations in America, and we're going to do it through a legal, proper means, which is get the executive that we voted for back into office, and then that executive that we voted for is going to make the correct decisions to safely bring America back together again under lawful authority, and take it away from those who are illegal, who are unlawful, who are not the ones we voted for. And we're not going to burn our own house down. We're not going to tear it apart. Even if we have agent provocateurs that are put into our midst trying to pull it off, we, the American people, will pull them down off the buildings. We'll stop them clubbing the windows out. If they open up the doors to try and invite us to do wrong, we're not going to do it in mass. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people were there present at Congress on January 6th and never entered the building unlawfully. A handful that might have to look around with some agent provocateurs that did some mischief. Well, that's a little different story, but we're not going to fall for that. And we see how we're being baited to fall for that. That's not what we're going to do. We're going to support our military, the people that are our fellow citizens in these lawful positions, to go do what they have to do under the lawful authority's direction as we take our country back. And that's not a civil war. That's a revolutionary war against foreign enemies operating on U.S. soil with treasonous, seditious, traitorous cooperation by some Americans who themselves have shown that they don't deserve the title American.
That's a Teddy Rooseveltian perspective right there, which I agree with completely. You're either an American or you're not. There's no room for a 50-50 American, and I think we've really come back to that. One, I want to thank you very much for your time today. It's an absolute honor to have you on this program. I'm looking forward to getting this program out. You've been a very constant voice and a big motivation, and I want to thank you as well. And when you find your interviews out there, it's a grounding point because it's like a check when you're moving along and you're doing your research and you're looking at the things, and then you find other voices out there that are speaking boldly and with the range of historical knowledge that you have and the connecting of the past to the present. I think it's such an essential perspective that we have to continue to bring. So I'm thanking you personally as well because it's been an important part of my process here as I found your voice just to be another one of those reinforcing points to keep me steady on the path.
I appreciate all the kind words. I appreciate everybody that stuck it out to listen to this long diatribe. I know a lot of the folks have heard me say much of this stuff previously. I hope this is, while it's long, it's kind of condensed from other places where I've said similar things, and that I appreciate that they stuck it out long enough to hear it one more time. But, you know, sometimes you have to hear things a few times to fully grasp it, and I hope that is what happened here. The one thing I would say in conclusion is, you know, in my book, page 71, Reversing the 17, I use the equation election equals mega cubed over corn. Corn are these fake leaders, these, you know, when you go to the FBI or CIA and they're training young people to go out and work as operatives undercover, etc., their farm is where they get trained. And so these people are farm products. We kid about them being the corn. And so, and they're put into office over us in various places. And you see all these people with these intelligence agency backgrounds. And then they miraculously, magically find themselves in, you know, these agency heads and in elected offices. And they're doing the bidding of people that aren't the American people. They've really become agent provocateurs, leveraged in positions of authority. And so the election 2020 was all about election equals mega, those that would make America great again, return sovereignty to the American people, return our right to industrialize our country and reindustrialize it, to mine right here at home, to have energy produced right here at home, the Make America Great Again crowd versus this corn crowd that wants this global everything, the greening of planet Earth. Yeah, and you're going to be the fertilizer. So I said, election 2020 equals Make America Great Again cubed or three over corn equals M3. Over corn. But for election 2022, the one that's coming, that will be when the American people finally come together in a unified fashion, more completely than ever before in recent memory, probably back even before the country was founded. And I say election 2022 is election equals mega, make America great again, quadrupled over the corn here in the country, because I think America's coming together in an amazing way, and we're going to be galvanized. We're going to be solidified as we find out how we've been managed and manipulated and maneuvered by these pedophiles, by these people that are sold out to global interests for the gain of their family over the American family, for the gain of themselves personally, to feed their addictions, to feed their perversions, sold out to the devil himself. And when America realizes what's being done in their name by these people and comes against it, we will come together because we are a God-fearing nation. That's what you saw on January 6th, was those of faith coming together, putting their foot down to reown their country and to stomp out this illegal occupation of America in this unholy city, this federal city, to capture us. But beyond that, and you asked me, you know, how the American people are doing this, how they're going to come together. The third election that I'm looking at, two elections ahead, 2024, Earth's election energy at the 2024 time period must equal mega, but spelled differently. Make Earth great again to the fifth power, quintupled, over global corn. We have a lot of fights ahead. We're going to get our country back. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be biblical. It's going to be unbelievable to many people, to most people. They aren't going to believe what's about to happen next. But that won't be enough, because when we're through getting control of our own house and setting it in order and kicking out all the demons and all of the countertops and walls are dusted and free of all the perversion and slime and filth, when we've got our house cleaned up and organized and decorated again, and we've brought in the Spirit of God to occupy our house again, the true God in heaven, not this satanic slime God. When we've kicked the reptiles out of control of our country and we have our house in order, then we will turn to the world, not to be our brother's keeper, not to run the world our way, but to be our brother's brother. When Cain said, when God came looking for Abel, where's your brother? And Cain says, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? It's the wrong answer. You're your brother's brother. You're your brother's brother. We are going to go and be our brother's brother out to the world. And we're going to stop the pedophilia. We're going to stop the monsters. We're going to protect the innocent. We're going to protect the weak. We're going to do our mission before God the way we're supposed to do it and be our brother's brother, and thereby not earn judgment from God, but instead get blessing from God. We're going to go from win to win to win. We are going to be winning every day because we're doing the will of God. We're protecting the innocents. We're kicking these assholes into Gitmo and worse. We'll deliver them to God for him to do the judgment. But we're going to get our country back, and we're going to get the world back, and the children of Adam will prevail in the end. And you're about to see that in your lifetime. Take it to the bank.
I'll take it to the bank. I'll even buy you a steak dinner to share the celebration. That'll be great. So, Juan, thank you very much. on back channel, I'm gonna have you send me some sort of contact information so I can send you some of our new swag that's coming out. I think you'll like it. It's pretty good. We got some stuff, so I just want to thank you for that. But anyway, thank you very much.
Hey, I appreciate everybody sticking around and appreciate so much you give me the opportunity to talk with your folks, and I hope this helps.
If you don't mind, I'd just like to close with a prayer, if that's okay with you.
Yes, please.
Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for this blessed meeting, an opportunity to once again explore the depths of knowledge and the strength of our faith. Lord, we're truly blessed with the voices that continue to help us understand the complexities of this fight, to see clearly through a fog of deception, and to understand the true meaning of the words are given to us through Scripture and the wisdom given to us through time. Lord, we ask that you'll continue to bless Juan and all that he does moving forward, to continue to inspire patriots to stand in your name and to stand boldly as we face this evil and re-empower the bloodline of Adam. And we say these things in Christ's holy name. Amen.
Amen.
So thanks for tuning in. Remember, if you like the channel, please hit subscribe, like the episode, and share it on your favorite social media forum. The Bards FM podcast can be found on Podbean at www.bards.fm. It can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and YouTube by entering Bards FM in the search bar on the respective apps or websites. And if you would like to support the channel with a donation link is below. All podcasts are written and produced by Scott Kesterson. Opinions expressed are the individuals only. Interpretations of events are the sole rights and opinions of the podcast presenter and guests. Bards FM, Bards of War, Fighting is Everything, and Expedition Cafe are trademarks of Scott Kesterson and Expedition Cafe. All work is owned and copyrighted by Scott Kesterson and Expedition Cafe. Thank you again. You have been listening to the Bards FM podcast. This is Scott Kesterson, out for now.